You're listening to Atlanta Baseball Talk, your weekly podcast for all things Atlanta Braves.
Welcome to Atlanta Baseball Talk, show number 413. Today is Sunday, August 5th, 2018, and my name is Steve. I'm joined by both Hammy and Kurt. And before we start, folks, please help out the podcast by subscribing, writing a review, or sharing links on Twitter and Facebook. If you don't, next week's podcast is just going to be a loop of Chip and Joe talking about real baseball players and how they don't strike out. All right, in tonight's
That's
show...
That's even worse than the Sam Freeman one from
It may
last
be
week.
Worse, yeah.
Yeah.
So in tonight's show, we'll sit down with Gabe Burns, the new Braves beat writer for the AJC. We'll wrap up the Braves' trade moves as well as the 5-1 week. But first, a quick break.
We're very happy to be joined by Gabe Burns, the Braves beat writer for the AJC. Gabe, thanks for joining us today. And first off, congratulations on your new gig.
Appreciate that, and thanks for having me on.
Well, it is our pleasure. All right, man, so we got to start with the trade deadline. And, you know, I would be in agreement with the general consensus around the moves checked all the boxes. You know, the team is moderately better. But they were sort of conservative moves. What was your opinion of the deadline?
Yeah, I think conservative is fair, but that's not necessarily a criticism. I know everyone kind of wanted the splash, and Freddie Freeman alluded to that yesterday. This team got a lot better, but it wasn't the splash that everyone wanted. Truth is, the splash wasn't really out there, unless you're looking at Chris Archer, in which case... Obviously, given what Pittsburgh gave up for him, that's a little, you know, that was never going to happen here. My understanding is Jacob DeGrom was never actually available, and that was more speculation than anything else. So I think what they did was they ended up adding a control, like they wanted, they added a controllable starter and a guy with a lot of upside who's similar to Archer. You know, people play the he's getting out of the AL East card, and he makes his first start today. This is a Saturday. And they ended up adding bullpen help at the cost of no prospects. And they added Duvall, who, I mean, they give up three guys for that, but Sims and Whistler had basically been phased out.
Sure.
And Tucker was a replacement-level player. So I can't help but to really like what they did as far as just adding depth to the team. I think this team really didn't really need a superstar. I think that's what the winter is going to be for, is a lot, you know, bigger shopping and whatnot. So I think they really added depth down the stretch. And as far as the NL East goes, unless Washington starts to wake up, it looks like it's going to be a two-team race. And you've got to keep in mind, you've got 7 head-to-head matchups there in the last 10 games. So that very well may determine the division at this point.
Yeah, I like what I've seen from Brock so far. I remember he's appeared twice. His first appearance, mm-hmm. It was 5 ground balls. It was all ground balls. He has much better defense behind him. So I'm very willing to believe, you know, going from worst team in baseball to a division race, better defense behind you, et cetera. Do you believe we can see similar improvement from Gausman, you know, an underachiever up to this point?
I think that's fair. Dom Chidi and Dave Wallace have obviously worked with him before, so they kind of know. They at least have the background work on him that other teams wouldn't. So, I mean, we'll really just see. I think Kurt Suzuki has said nice things about him already. I mean, a lot of people have spoken well of him, his stuff. We got a faulty comparison as far as how electric his stuff is. Wow. I mean, it's interesting just because he feels like a guy who, best case scenario, is going to be about a solid 3, which would be – which people, for some reason, have this kind of – they associate that with a negative connotation almost with prospects. Like when we say this guy looks like he'd be a 3, you know, a solid 3 starter. Right. Why can't he be a number 1? I mean, so this is a dude who routinely eats innings, which this team desperately needs, because the only real innings eater that these – that was one of my concerns entering the year, was the only real innings eater you had that was reliable as far as – because McCarthy obviously is always hurt – was Julio, and obviously that hasn't played out the way anyone wanted it to.
Right.
So a guy like Gausman, you know, that helps the bullpen too. We talk so much about the bullpen, but they were logging a ton of innings, and especially early on, in Sam Freeman's case, it felt like he was pitching every single day early in the season. So that matters. And if Gausman can go out there today and throw up six innings, that's big. I mean, they've already – we said you had to win three out of four here. Well, they've won the first two. So if you can just get one more win before you leave New York, I mean, that would be a great situation. They just also need the Phillies to lose.
Yeah.
The Marlins aren't doing him any favors there. But, you know, yeah, I like Gausman a lot. As far as he really is, we've talked about this, he really is the ideal change of scenery candidate.
Yeah.
Just look at his resume. You look at how he's produced. It's like, okay, this guy seems like – and it doesn't help that the Orioles, you know, have a history of letting these guys go, and then they go on to, you know, become Jake Arrieta or whatever. So – yeah, it's going to be interesting to see what happens here, but I think your worst-case scenario is that you've got a back-end starter at a reasonable rate for the next couple of years, which this team needs because everyone wants to bring up these prospects, but you can't just fill a rotation with, you know, kids. You can't, I mean, especially when you're trying to contend, you can't just throw out a bunch of 20-year-olds. And at the same time, like Dave O'Brien, of course, who I took over for, we were talking yesterday, and he's saying he doesn't understand why people would want Sonny Gray, because his argument was, you know, you've got to leave room for these young guys, and you can't keep trading. You know, you've already got Gausman now. You want to trade for Gray? I mean, how many of these young guys are we going to push out? Which I understand that, too. So we'll kind of see what happens with Gausman, but I think their best-case scenario is that he pitches – he pitches at least a little better than he did in Baltimore, but really the innings thing is the biggest, especially this season down the stretch, is the biggest thing to watch from him.
Yeah, and back to your comment about, you know, can't fill the bullpen with just kids, particularly in a pennant race. And when one of your veterans is Julio, who it's hard to depend on, it makes it even tougher. I mean, Gausman fills that role too, of hopefully dependable anyway.
Mm. Folty has been great,
yep.
But he doesn't go deep in games.
Right.
So, I mean, that's taxing on your pen, too. I mean, it's just it's been an issue all year long as far as how these starters go. I mean, your best guy has been Anibal Sanchez.
Right.
I mean.
And again, last night, my God, seeing him strike out, what was nine, I think.
Yeah, nine and six.
It's just, yeah, it was just what a great game. So the first pickup for the bullpen was Johnny Venters. Obviously, a very nice story. Great to see him back in a Braves uniform. Have you heard Brian Snitker come out and say how he's going to use him? Because he's a loogie, right? And his splits against lefties are quite good this year. But I know he's faced at least one righty this year in his limited action. Has Snitker said anything?
Well, I mean, we're just going to see. I mean, Snit is a huge matchups guy.
Yeah.
And at times we've seen him kind of disregard reverse splits like with Biddle.
Mm-hmm.
I always kind of go back to that heavily criticized moment in St. Louis when he pulled Biddle for Moylan to face Tommy Pham, and Pham, of course, homers.
Yeah.
So, I mean, no, nothing specific as far as how that goes. He doesn't seem to be having any limitations with Venters. I kind of wondered if you were going to have to be careful with this guy, just
right.
You know, given his history. And he's already got a light workload this year. And there's a reason for that. You don't want to overwork this guy. And I think Snit will be the first to tell you at times he overworks some of these relievers. So, no, nothing specific as far as how that goes. It's more just kind of whatever the situation calls for is the way that he would always word it. I think with Brock, I think you're seeing that already he's starting to kind of – I want to say it was the eighth inning both times he pitched. I might be wrong on that. But I think he was informed his role was going to be the seventh to ninth inning, and Brock does have closer experience. So I think with him, you're going to end up seeing him in the eighth inning role, and already it has looked – the pass to AJ Minter has already looked better with Brock pitching the eighth than you know just kind of bringing in you playing musical chairs in that inning.
Well,
so,
yeah, I mean
that already is huge.
Yeah, Brock's arrival huge. The fact that Biddle has settled into a really really good piece in the bullpen has been huge. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
And the Biddle thing, I mean, this whole bullpen has kind of been the same story all year. Like, Dan Winkler was phenomenal. You know, Shane Carl was phenomenal. They start dropping off. Biddle steps up. It just feels like whenever one of these guys, with the exception of, you know, Freeman and some of these guys, just hit a really low mark.
Yeah.
A lot of these guys like Carl and Biddle and Winkler kind of have fluctuated, but they're kind of picking each other up. So, and I talked to AJ Minter about that the other day, and he felt like his worst time was early in the season. He admitted even the first couple of weeks, it was like, wow, I'm here. You know, he kind of was having that little deer in the headlights moment where he's a major leaguer and now he's settled in and you see how great he's been in the closer role. And unless they were to sign somebody, I don't think that he's going to relinquish that position anytime soon.
Right. So back to the conservative approach. Do you think in Alex's mind, was this, you know, look, we're not a World Series caliber team. There isn't a splash. I still want to see what I have, a combination of all of it. What do you think his mindset was heading into trade?
It's definitely a combination. I know it's kind of the easy answer there, but I'll say this. Alex went into the year just a complete just year to evaluate everything. Okay, I think everybody understands that. So this team vastly exceeds expectations. They cool off. You know, I think they lost 8 of 11 before the All-Star break. You know, they come out of the break, they split the four road games, and then the Dodgers just start hammering them.
Yeah.
And the Dodgers are the measuring stick of the NL. So, I mean, that's a pretty big deal. I'm not one to really overreact to, you know, July series and whatever, but I mean, that was a little bit telling. So, from his perspective, no, you're not going to go ahead and push your chips in to try to salvage this team. And you'll notice that Philly didn't either. Not that they've been struggling, but they didn't exactly go after the big splash themselves. So, and my biggest point in all of this is everyone saying Alex was conservative. They were one of the most active teams. I mean, they weren't the Yankees going out there and bringing in several rentals, but they were one of the most active teams. I don't really see what the big move was that we kind of refer to. It's more just in theory, what is, you know, we're talking about what is the big splash he could have made. I personally don't really see it unless you wanted him to go get Machado. And I understand if you did, but at the same time, I mean, that's going to set up, that's going to set up drama in the off season because I'm not convinced this team would be able to re-sign him.
Sure.
So, I mean, I'm not really sure what exactly people wanted done. I think the worst thing with Gausman was that everyone was kind of expecting Archer.
Right.
Or at least, you know, really hopeful. And I think, because as soon as the first tweet I did about Gausman, you know, your mentions just blow up with, you know, who the hell was this guy and boo and disappointment and all this. I mean, that's the worst thing working against him was that people wanted Archer. So, I mean, we talk about them not making a big move, but I do not believe there were a lot of big moves to be made, but this winter there are going to be plenty, and then you're going to be happy that you kept those prospects and that you have that financial flexibility.
Yeah. All right. So looking back on this week, Gabe, what do you think about Allard's start? Do you think his stuff works in the majors?
Yeah, I think he pitched better than his line. I know that's kind of an easy thing to say too, but you know, some people kind of have concern about him, about his ceiling.
Yeah,
which I don't think is really that big of a deal because if this guy turns out to be, you know, a number four guy who can eat innings, who can, you know, give you a few like wild starts every now and then, that would be fantastic. So yeah, I definitely think he's a major league pitcher. I think just because his velocity isn't, you know, he's not fanning people left and right. Yeah, I think this guy he's definitely a starter for one. I know with a lot of these guys we kind of debate, are they going to turn out? I mean, we had that debate with Folty for a while. Is this guy ultimately going to be a reliever? So I think there's no doubt that this guy's a starter. I think he'll probably settle in as a middle rotation starter, which is great because again, all of these guys can't turn into aces. I think you look at a guy like Kyle Wright, a guy like Mike Soroka, those are your bets for a number one or a number two.
Yeah.
But Allard would be great. And maybe, you know, maybe Allard, because of that, is expendable. And he's one of your better trade chips when you try to really, if you're trying to add a bat or something. But no, I definitely think he's got a pretty solid future. It's fair to kind of question how good he's going to end up being. But at this point, it's impossible to say. This kid is 20 and just pitched in the major leagues.
Yeah.
I mean, we're almost taking it for granted now, having these 20 and 21-year-olds debut for this team. But it really is unconventional. So I'm going to kind of stay away from complete judgment right now on him. But yeah, we'll see him again for sure. I mean, with how few off days, this team has four off days the rest of the year. They've got two doubleheaders, and they've got that August 30th makeup game against the Cubs, I should say. This one's in Atlanta, and that filled one of their off days. So what you're going to see is they're going to have guys like Allard make starts to kind of stretch out the rotation, especially with how great Newcomb has been when he gets an extra day's rest. And they will never admit it, but they're using a six-man rotation without ever actually having the sixth man on their roster.
Right. So that actually tees up my next question. With all those games coming up, do you think that the front office trusts Gohara enough this year to start him again?
Yeah, I think he'll start again. A lot leaked out before the trade deadline about him being moved. I certainly think that they're more than open to moving him. There's just a lot of things there that would make him more expendable than some of their other top arms. And obviously his potential is still there. He's still, you know, of all of their pitchers, I mean, if all of their pitchers absolutely peaked, he might have the most talent. I mean, and he's still young.
Yeah.
So obviously there are conditioning concerns there as well. But yeah, I do think you'll see him again, because this has never stopped being an evaluation year. If they were 20 games over 500, it's still an evaluation year in the mind of Alex. Even you can contend and just kind of see what you've got. So I think it would be in their best interest to continue pitching Gohara. And it's pretty clear at this point he's not really an asset coming out of the bullpen.
Yeah.
Which is a major disappointment, because what they envisioned for him was coming in, eating a couple innings, you know, just a power arm for these guys to face later in games. And it just never materialized. He got shelled about every time he went out there. So yeah, I do think that you're going to see him get a couple of starts down the stretch, along with Allard and along with Freed. So, because they're just going to have to fill in the gaps. They're going to have to create off days for these guys, because this is a pretty brutal stretch that they've got these last couple months.
Do you think we see McCarthy start again this year?
I don't.
Yeah.
No. They won't. They haven't. I do not think you will see McCarthy or Soroka again this year.
Yeah.
They won't say that. And you know, the best case scenario is that you would see Soroka late September, and at that point I don't really see what the goal would be in bringing him back. I think, considering his age, and you know, he made a few major league starts, he got his feet wet, let's just go ahead and let him go into the off season healthy and preparing for next year. You know, I mean, maybe he's healthy to the point he could make a late season appearance. I just don't see what the need would be to bring him back, especially when you've already got so many starters right now.
Yeah.
And McCarthy, I mean, McCarthy obviously wasn't pitching as well as anyone had hoped before he went down. And he's kind of been, you know, pushed out of the mix. So it would, you know, for him, I mean, maybe he would want to come back and make a few starts and try to save his free agent value. I wouldn't think that you're going to be seeing him again.
All right. So the one guy we haven't mentioned is Tukey. And Tukey's at 107 innings in 18, 145 is his career high last year. Do you think, you know, the bullpen is sort of as big as it gets for him with Atlanta this year?
Yeah, I would think so. It just makes sense on a number of counts just to go ahead and bring him out of the pen. And I think that time is coming. I'm not, you know, obviously there's no pinpointed date or anything, but we're getting close. Within the next couple of weeks, I would think. Tukey ends up coming in, eating innings out of the bullpen. getting his feet wet. I mean, it's another kind of balancing between contending and evaluation type thing.
Yeah.
So, in theory, Tukey would be a big ad for this bullpen, but he's another kid who's going to be making his major league debut. And I mean, earlier this year, we had people screaming for Evan Phillips to come help the bullpen, and they were right. I mean, Evan Phillips was better than a lot of, you know, what they were pitching. So we'll just see with Tukey. Obviously, he's a guy. He's another huge ceiling guy.
Yeah.
That curveball is something else. He got a lot of praise at the Futures game. The Reds outfielder, his name escapes me right now. I believe he's a top prospect with Cincinnati. He's from Georgia, actually.
Okay.
Name escapes me at the moment, but he had a lot of praise for Tukey and just talked about just how impressive he is and said that was the toughest at bat. He ended up doubling off of him. He said that was the toughest at bat of the night and just how good that guy was. So he's drawing praise throughout the league, and he's definitely he's going to be the last guy to debut this year, but there's a lot to look forward to there. But I wouldn't, because of his innings, I wouldn't anticipate that he makes a start, but you never know. Again, they're going to have guys fill in, and maybe they give him one or two.
Yeah. All right, Gabe, let's finish up with a lightning round. All right, so Freddie has 18 homers, Ozzie has 20. Who finishes the regular season with more?
I'm gonna go with Freddie. I still think he now that he's back in a pennant race, I think he'll probably heat up down the stretch and just beat out Ozzie.
All right, Camargo has 13 to Acuna's 11. Same question.
Acuna. You see, moving him to leadoff has been the spark that this team really needed. I mean, this guy's hitting like 360 in leadoff right now. So yeah. I think that's going to continue. I think he's gonna end up with a bigger home run total.
It's so crazy, the Acuna Albies thing at the top of the lineup. You know, they go 2-for-4 every night. It's amazing they're on base. They never walk. The whole thing is so weirdly unconventional, you know, but more exciting than anything I've seen in years with the team.
It really is. And like more exciting, it's about more exciting than anything in baseball right now. Like Mets reliever, Jeremy Blevins was telling us yesterday. He's like, you know, I was worried with, you know, Freddie and Markakis in the middle. He's like, but now it's, you know, you forget that there because you're dealing with these two guys at the top. And he's like, it's an unbelievable lineup. And I mean, it's pushed Ender. Obviously, Ender hasn't had the year that he's wanted. But it's, I mean, now that you've got Duvall, he's coming off the bench, and you're like, look at how much farther along this team is than it was a year or two ago.
Right, and Camargo and his ascension, and he makes the lineup longer too.
And you know, his teammates are all in on him playing, on him as a regular third baseman. I know we've. In the media and fans, we debate, you know, do they need to go get a third baseman? You know, a lot of people wanted Moose, or, you know, there's a lot of kind of, is he a super utility guy? But Freddie and Tyler Flowers have been just enthusiastic about what this guy is doing with regular playing time. And I mean, he's built up too. Like, every time you turn around, he looks a lot stronger. I mean, obviously the power's there. He's drawing his walk rate is unbelievable compared to a year ago. I mean, this guy, he wasn't a top prospect. He just kind of came out of nowhere, and he's literally produced ever since he got up here.
Yeah. It's interesting, you know, Freddie, quiet leader, accurate description. He uses the media when he wants to. He made his opinions known publicly about Snitker last year, and he's making his opinions known publicly about Camargo this year. I think it's very purposeful.
Yeah. He's very clear with us. He's never afraid to speak his mind. And you've also got the other leader on the team, Nick Markakis, who he's more of a handle things behind closed doors type of guy. And it's really worked for this team. There's not anybody loud, and there's not anyone the media goes to get a, you know, a crazy quote or to say something off the wall. With Freddie and Markakis, things are just handled, I would say, the right way with us and just with the player, especially having all these young guys who are still kind of figuring out the game. And I mean, those two together are just pretty much the perfect combination of leadership for this team. I guess you could argue maybe they could use another fiery guy, but whatever they're doing has been working.
True. All right, man, over-under on Braves wins total this year, 87.
Oh, man. They're at 59 now. I'm probably going to go under. I would probably say around 87. 87, 88. That's really the perfect over-under. for right now, I would say 87, because if you look at their September.
Yeah, it's rough.
That's brutal. Yep. It's brutal. I mean, you've got three against the Mets. But besides that, it is rough. You've still got a West Coast trip, and that can't be ignored. You got to go out to Phoenix for Arizona's, you know, I believe they're still in first place in the NL West right now. And San Francisco is still, they're still going to play you tough, and the Braves typically don't play well out there.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, it's, what I'm saying is that August is a huge month, because they've got to allow, I mean, any team is going to struggle with that September stretch. So they need to have a strong August. So that's a little bit of a buffer if they end up kind of, you know, win-loss in September. So I think that's what makes this month so huge, and especially with the Phillies. I mean, the Phillies are playing well. I think the Phillies are about to play Arizona themselves coming up. So, you know, Braves should probably secure first place by the end of this month and then just try to take it into those last 10 games.
Yeah. All right. So last question, Phillies over under 87. See, I'm sneakily asking you who you think is going to win the division here, Gabe.
Yeah, I see that now. you know what's so crazy is I'd want to say 87 for them, too.
Okay, one game playoff, I mean,
it would be interesting. I mean, could you imagine a one game playoff with the Braves and Phillies to determine who wins the East? I mean, that would these games between these teams, since that first series when Kapler was just a train wreck.
Oh yeah,
these games have been phenomenal. So it would be fun to watch. I don't have as much knowledge of their schedule. I would kind of need to look at theirs.
Sure.
Kind of look at their team and get a better feel for it, but. It's tough to say. I mean, I like the Braves. I like the additions that the Braves made. I think they're going to have a lot bigger impact than, you know, considering what they gave up. I mean, I really think that the Venters and Brock are going to be huge for the bullpen, however Smith uses them. I think the Duvall pickup has the potential to be the biggest one out of all of them. And Ender started hitting a little bit, you know. Since the All-Star break, he started to show some life at the plate, and if he could regain half of his form from before, I mean, that would be huge, having him come off the bench and as a defensive replacement against lefties. It's tough. I'd probably lean toward the Phillies right now just because of the September Braves schedule, but again, I say that without actually studying theirs. And I don't trust the Phillies to kind of hold this together. And I think Washington is still in it. So we'll kind of see what happens. I'm not punting on them yet.
Yeah. Three straight since the trade deadline.
Yeah. I'll kind of reevaluate toward mid August. If they're still seven out, you know, when we're getting to mid to late August, then okay, I'll, you know, then that's probably it. But I'm not totally convinced that they're dead yet. And I asked Ender this yesterday, and he said no. He said they're clearly really talented, and they're, you know, there's no reason to think that they're out of it yet. And whatever, I'm not really sure what all's been going on there. We've got a lot of different reports about their clubhouse falling apart and everything. But it wouldn't be shocking to see them sneak up, and the next thing you know, you turn around and they're only three games out, and it becomes a three-team race again. So we'll see. I mean, the NL East to me is probably the most interesting division race. I mean, I'm not a big Yankees Red Sox guy, so I don't really care about that. And I think the Red Sox are pretty much running away with it now. And
yeah,
the NL West is pretty interesting, but those are teams you knew were going to be good. I mean, the NL East here is the heavily favored Nats, just kind of, you know, struggling all year. And then you've got these two upstart teams that are supposed to make big moves in the offseason. It's just the most exciting race to follow.
I have to agree with you, Gabe. And look, man, we appreciate your time. You have a great rest of the weekend in New York and a great rest of the season. And we look forward to talking to you again down the road.
Yeah, sure thing. Thanks so much for having me on, y'all.
Next up, Ham and Kurt chime in on the moves made at the trade deadline. But first, a quick break. So, Ham, your thoughts on the trade deadline and what the Braves did?
I'm pretty impressed. I have to say I was dubious. I was very nervous that we were not ready to go all in on a World Series run, and that we would give up prospects to that we shouldn't have to have given up for rentals. And I think Anthopoulos was right there, right? I mean, he said as much. And so I think it was sort of nothing short of brilliant of what he did. He made the team better. He's got some pieces that are intriguing beyond this year. And he literally gave up nothing. Sorry, Matt Whistler.
Right. Whistler and Sims. Yeah. My God, it was never going to happen.
It was never going to happen for those guys. And I, you know, maybe a change of scenery and those guys will turn around and great. But I think it was pretty artful. And, you know, and it was great to see the national media when they were ranking who won the trade deadline, who did best. Like the Braves were number two and number three in a lot of these, you know, recaps of the trade deadline. So I think they did it perfectly. Now, I think they're going to make a playoff run? Maybe. I think the East is anybody's for the taking. Do I think they're ready to win the World Series because of these moves? No. But having said all that, I thought it was great.
Yeah. Curtis, how about you?
It was great.
Yeah, same. I mean, that's the key. You are better this year. You are in a better position to make a run. Gausman is controllable. So you hope it's a change of scenery. We already saw some bad luck with the BABIP numbers that we talked about last week. So you hope some of that gets rectified. I know they're already working. They've already moved. They've changed his position on the rubber. They're going to work with some other things. So clearly they had some ideas in mind even before they brought him over there. And that goes with Dave Wallace and the guys that they've got in the system here that have worked with him in the past. So you hope that they can get something out of him and then he can be your three, something like that. And, yeah, I mean, it's really amazing that he was able to pull all this off with giving up nothing, basically.
Yeah, and while none of it's sexy, of course, you can't really argue with what we've seen so far. I mean, Gausman, I guess kind of who knows, right? He looked really good for five innings, and then the rails sort of came off in that sixth inning with the three straight hits. But Brock has been great. I mean, including Sunday's finale in New York, three appearances, three innings, no runs, two hits, one walk, four strikeouts. Venters, four appearances, three total innings, one hit, one walk, two strikeouts. You know, the only one who hasn't really done much yet is Duvall. And as we heard Gabe say, he thinks that could be the best move of all.
Yeah.
So, yeah, really nice. And again, like you said, Ham, giving up absolutely nothing. So, in the midst of the trade deadline madness, the Braves took both games from the Marlins and three of four from the Mets. So, Kurt, what's your big takeaways from the 5-1 week, other than the rainout screwing up your shot in the dark?
Right. Well, it's good to win, always. We saw some offense sort of the top of the order when Acuna and Albies get going. That is something to behold and so exciting. Teron, I really wanted more out of him today. I know they ended up winning that game today, but he, for all intents and purposes, has been your number one starter. And for him to sort of go out and put you in a hole so quickly, I know that we've talked about him a lot and how up and down he is, but it's just, you know, I mean, I don't even know where he's your fourth best starter now. And they had some stats today that were incredible. 39% of his base runners are coming on walks. Roughly 25% of the hits he allows are homers.
Yeah, no, it's crazy, right? Because when he's not being bad, he's amazing.
Yeah, and it's those two issues. You walk guys and then you give up homers. And I know that he didn't walk guys and give up homers today, but he walked the leadoff batter twice. He scored both times and then he gave up a homer so to get up the third run. So we need him to be more consistent. I guess that's not never going to happen. We need him to be better. He is a huge piece going forward with all of this, and he just needs to sort of go on a run here where he's pitched really well in New York. That lineup had a 150 batting average against him today. So it was a game that they really needed to win, and they really had to overcome a lot to pull it out. So,
well, thank God for his offense.
Right.
Seriously.
Hammy, how about you?
I would say one is that it's good to see that we can beat the bad teams. You know, after a tough week last week, to come back and just take care of business against the bad teams was great. We still have a little bit of that late inning heroics and magic in us to win the games like we had today, which is nice. But the biggest takeaway for me was watching baseball this week, watching the Phillies scores just as much as I was watching the Braves scores. And after I forget which night it was. I guess it was Thursday night after the Braves won, flipping over instantly on MLB TV to the Phillies game and watching them almost blow it and come back and win it. But it's pennant baseball in
the first week in August. It's just amazing. It's so fun.
And it's exciting.
The season is so fun.
It really is. And it's, like I said earlier, I think it's anyone's for the taking. Certainly the Phillies aren't flawless. They have a lot of strengths. They're playing with a lot of fun. And we showed that as well this week. So it's going to be a great stretch.
You know, I was listening to the MLB Network this afternoon, so Sunday afternoon after the game, and someone, I don't know if it was the Mets broadcasters or it may have just been the radio station, but they were talking about that one of the biggest worries they had about the Phillies was that their defense is bad, which I'm not watching them nearly close enough to know that, but it was good to see that because I know the bullpen has been very good and their starting pitching certainly has been good. Their offense has been good, but, you know, rough defense can be problematic. So it was good to hear that.
Well, and same for us. There's little room for error, right? I mean, it's going to come down to one game probably at the end, right? And one crazy error or one missed hit or a big play either way could be the difference maker.
Right, and all those head-to-head games too, of course, in September.
Yeah, and that series at New York, I know New York's not very good, but God, their starting pitching is ridiculous. And if Syndergaard's healthy, DeGrom, Wheeler, Oswalt pitched pretty well today. Yeah. So that could be a tough series right at the end of the year going into Philadelphia. We have 7 games. That's the last 10 games. 4 with Philly, 3 at New York, 3 at Philly. So that New York series right in the middle could be something that really goes a long way toward deciding who wins the division.
Mm-mm-mm. How about it? So my big takeaway was the bullpen. The bullpen now, of course, pitched way too many innings because the starters still aren't going long enough. But over those 6 games, the bullpen pitched 21 and a third and gave up 2 earned the entire week. One by Winkler a few days ago and then one by Minter in the Sunday finale in New York. I mean, the bullpen has all of a sudden sort of rediscovered itself with Biddle and Venters and Brock. Winkler's a little, you know, I mean, it is some things have been shorn up, at least right now. Kurt, you mentioned the top of the order. Acuna went 9 for 25 this week. And of those, 4 of those 9 hits were a double, a triple, and 2 homers. And he only went hitless in that Wheeler game where Wheeler just shut down everybody.
Yes, pretty much everybody else did too.
So a good week, a good week. I mean, games you have to win because it's the Marlins and the Mets, but they did just that. All right, guys, let's move on to Shot in the Dark, our crazy predictions for the week that just ended. And we will begin with our listener Shot in the Dark from Dan C., who predicted that Colby Allard would pitch at least 6 innings with 5 or less walks plus hits allowed. So Allard went 5, and he gave up 9 hits and 2 walks. So not quite there, Dan, but thank you for playing. And all right, guys, let's see how we did. So I'll start with me. This week, I predicted that the Braves would trade for a starting pitcher and that he would give up no more than 2 earned in his first start. So the pitcher was traded for, obviously Gausman, but he gave up 3 and 2. So very close. So, Hammy, you predicted that Albies would hit over 300 with 2 homers. Albies was 5-for-26, a 192 batting average, with no homers this week.
Sorry, Ozzy. That's on me, guys. Yeah.
And Kurt, so yours is an interesting one, I gotta say. Because, Kurt, you predicted a 5-2 week, and the starters would give up 18 runs or less. So the starters gave up 16 over six games as opposed to 18 over seven games. So 16 over six games is an average of 2.7 runs per game. Your prediction would have averaged 2.6 runs per game. So I think that we should give it to you.
Oh, I did not think you were going that direction.
I mean, it's a tenth of a run. Wow, Kurt, bringing your own sound effects.
I know.
I feel like I was waiting to see if I was going to get that. And since it's really, what is it now, August 5th, and I'm just now hitting a shot in the dark, sort of.
I mean, the fact that you got the five, Uzzula, whatever. You know, you got the five wins. So, Kurt, good on you. You are on the board. You are leading for the week for the month of August.
I can finally use the box full of koozies I have in the basement.
That's right. At least with a clear conscience, you can use.
Yes, exactly. Really? Exactly. Just one of them, Curtis. Just one of them. I go crazy now.
All right. So, guys, let's see what we're predicting this week. I am going Adam Duvall hits two homers this week. The Braves should face three lefties if the schedule holds. So he should get three starts this week, two homers. Hammy, what do you got?
I'm going to do my week ahead predictions and my shot in the dark all at once. I say we sweep the Nats, but then get swept by the Brewers and go 4-3.
Boo.
Yeah, hey, what about sweeping the Nats?
Sorry, man. You can't have it both ways.
Oh.
All right, Curtis.
You.
I have a question and why they didn't just play one of these games tomorrow instead of having a doubleheader on Tuesday. And what's the Nationals? Maybe the Nationals are playing tomorrow. I didn't bother to check that. Acuna and Albies. God, I got to stop doing that. Acuna and Albies bat over 350 for the week, hit four homers combined.
Yeah, that would be good. I would take that. All right, folks, remember, you get to play two each week, so don't forget to get your shot in the dark in before first pitch on Tuesday. Remember, it's an early game because there's a doubleheader with the Nats. And if we pick yours, we'll discuss it on next week's show, and you could win an ABT koozie if you get it exactly right. All right, guys, let's talk about this week ahead. Seven games in 6 days, to your point, Kurt. Four at the Nationals and three back home with the Brewers. So here are the pitching matchups. And look, this is probably going to be wrong because three different places I looked had three different pitching orders, particularly for the Nationals. But I'm going with the MLB at Bat app. So game one doubleheader against the Nationals. Max Fried will face Jeffrey Rodriguez in his 6.86 ERA. He did face the Braves once this year on June 3rd. When he came in the middle of the first inning when Hellickson got hurt, he went 4 2/3 scoreless against the Braves that day. In the nightcap, it'll be Newcomb versus Scherzer in his 2.33. Game 3 will have Folty facing Tommy Malone and his 3.0 ERA. He's making just his third start of the season for the Nats. He went like 7 innings, 1 earned his last start. And then the final game of the National Series, Anibal Sanchez will face Gio Gonzalez in his 4.04. Gio has not been good lately, really not great all year. On to the Brewers series, back home in Atlanta, Gausman gets his second start as a Brave, and he will face Freddy Peralta in his 3.54. Peralta gave up 1 earned over 6 in early July against the Braves. Next up, Julio, back on the mound, will face Wade Miley in his 2.10 ERA. And then finishing up the week, Sean Newcomb will face Chase Anderson and his 3.65. So we know Hammy has us going 4-3. Kurt, what about you?
I'm going to go 4-3, too. Split with Washington. Split with Washington, win 2 of 3 over Milwaukee.
Yeah, I'm going to go 5-2. I think that they will split 2 with the Nats and sweep the Brewers.
Oh, wow.
In your face, Hammy.
Oh, my God. Well, side bet.
That's right. All right, folks, that is the show. Remember, you can find us at Blog Talk Radio, as well as iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and Spreaker. And as always, you can find us at AtlantaBaseballTalk.com to access all of our shows and to post in our comment section. And be sure to follow us on Twitter at ATL Baseball Talk and to like us on Facebook. Thanks for listening, and go Braves!
Thanks for listening to Atlanta Baseball Talk, your weekly podcast for all things Atlanta Braves. To find new shows, to post in our forum, or to send a comment, please visit us at AtlantaBaseballTalk.com.